It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, the ninth day of September. What the hell? Oh, God, please don't let it be one of those nights. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, 9 by 9 by 9, 999, in honor of Herb Cain. Hallelujah and amen. Yeah. And, well... I'm here, you're there, it's prayer meeting Wednesday, and if you want to be part of the online congregation, run on over to headon.live and click on chat room. If you've never picked out a screen name before, do so now, and you'll be joyfully greeted by the likes of Anatole and Jimmy and Silent R. Lamar and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky. Evacuations underway in some parts of the West. Apparently, San Francisco looks downright apocalyptic. Sparky sent me a photograph this morning of what it looked like out near the man cave when he got up this morning there in Northern California. An orange sky and a slightly brighter circular disc in the distance. The sun struggling to pierce the haze of smoke. Because, well, we may have a pandemic going on, but climate change is still a thing, and nature is still batting last. Roger in Oregon pointing out evacuations are still some 20 miles away. They've moved the evacuation center to the high school rather than the fairgrounds, as it's further away from the evac zone, closer to the center of town. Dear God. Wow. It's got to be frightening. It can't help but be. And, well, everybody who's in that area, please stay safe. I got a message for, Dave number 11. I am happily in possession of 2 jars of Henry's olives, the new Spanish style fermented garlic and oregano olives. And well, I just got home a little bit ago from dropping Ferg off at work, and I stopped by the mailbox and there they were, and I got home and eagerly unpacked them and set to pitting some of them with my olive and cherry pitter. And oh, my heavenly days, they are a delight. They fairly scream to be included in a wonderfully dirty martini. Thank you, Dave. Thank you. Thanks a ton. These things are they're the best olives I've ever eaten in my life. And I like me some olives. Apparently, although Sparky takes Wednesdays off, he did inform me that it's actually cool enough there where he is to fold space today, because that's what all the smoke in the sky has apparently done. Kind of a little reminder of what we used to think about when they would talk about nuclear winter. But every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. Oh, no. So we have thanks to send out. Thanks to Brandon and Fennell. I stopped by the post office today. Thank you very kindly to Brandon and Fennell. Thank you to our subscribers for this ninth day of the month. That means thank you to Khalil. Thank you very kindly, Khalil. And thank you to James. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you to Mary Bell. Thank you all very kindly indeed for being partial sponsors of the program. Where does that leave us now? Well, to catch up with the middle of the week, we are at $425 away. We've got $90 to go on Paul from Parts Unknown's We Are Many Allies challenge. If that happens, then that'll take us down to $225, which will be awesome. So remember, the next $90 that come in get doubled, courtesy of Paul from Parts Unknown. And so, as noted, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. I guess I could have held it yesterday, but can you imagine how difficult it is to sit on a clip of Michelle batshit crazy Bachman talking about how black transgender Marxists are trying to turn America, via Joe Biden no less, into a commie country? Where we will no longer have freedom because no longer will we have 29 different kinds of breakfast cereal to choose from? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But that doesn't mean we don't have prayer meeting Wednesday stuff. Oh, no. No, no. The little old blue-haired ladies gave me a bit of a break this week, prayer meeting Wednesday-wise. They didn't expect anything of me down in the Fellowship Hall kitchen because they knew that These next four days are going to be sheer living hell. I took Ferg to work this afternoon. Continues to be a terrifying experience. I'm positively astonished by the behavior of corporations in this state, and I suppose other states as well. I don't know what kind of terrible lawyers they have who would advise them not to enforce a mask mandate. Because once again, as I pulled up to his place of employ, I watched any number of people parade into that place not wearing a mask. And acting as though everything is perfectly hunky-dory, even though, well, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice had himself another press conference today. He was, of course, late. He's late for every one of them. He's emulating his God Emperor, the galumphing Trump. But when he got around to holding his press conference, he let on as how things are getting real bad in West Virginia. And our positivity rate is soaring because of all that freedom going on around out there. And, of course, when I saw the apocalyptic photos from California, it made me wonder if maybe some people in the affected areas who heretofore had not been willing to wear a mask to prevent others from the spread of COVID-19 might be masking now to protect themselves from the smoke in the air. Because cognitive dissonance is a hell of a drug. It really, really is. So that's kind of, and like I said, the little old blue-haired ladies gave me a break. Because they knew that this is going to be a miserable few days. So as usual, the program will end at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I'll upload the program to both Podbean and White Rose Society, and that means it'll go to all the various other podcasting platforms. And then, about 11:15 or so, I'll get back in the car and schlep over to Beckley and pick him up and turn around and schlep home, where we will arrive by about 1 a.m., and I, of course, by then will be wide awake. This is just a hot mess, is what this is. So, again, at least I was on time for coming on air this evening, as opposed to, say, being late. But we got two more days of this, and then we're back to the day shift on the weekend. Yeah. And I just hope I can maintain some sort of equanimity and presence of mind through the next couple of days. I don't know. I got to figure out some way to get some relief on this, but it's damn near impossible, because what it boils down to is I got to help him get a place to live, I guess, over there. And then I've got to figure out a way to get him some kind of transportation. And those are almost impossible. Impossible. Demands. Yeah. Now, I didn't mention it earlier, and I was remiss in that regard, but if you do pop by the chat room, please remember, since Sparky takes Wednesdays off, you will be, if you pop into the chat room, you will be moderated this evening by a pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Didn't want you to think that it was an unmoderated room at this point. So, you've got professional moderation going on even as we speak. We do have prayer meeting Wednesday stuff and things to deal with, but of course the story that has rocketed to the top of the headlines today has to do with the fact that Bob Woodward is selling a new book. I mean, that's the way I look at it. And the great big, really humongous bombshell report out of said book is that Trump knew, Nitwit Nero knew exactly how dangerous the coronavirus was, but knowing he was being taped by Bob Woodward, admitted as early as February, just how dangerous the coronavirus was. And he also shared with Bob Woodward why it was that he wasn't going to do anything about it.
Now it's turning out it's not just old people, Bob. Just today and yesterday, some startling facts came out. It's not just older.
Yeah, exactly.
Young people, to plenty of young people.
So give me a moment of talking to somebody, going through this with Fauci or somebody who kind of it caused a pivot in your mind, because it's clear just from what's on the public record that you went through a pivot on this to, oh my God, the gravity is almost inexplicable and unexplainable.
Well, I think, Bob, really, to be honest with you.
Sure, I want you to.
I wanted to always play it down. I still like playing it down.
Yes, sir.
Because I don't want to create a panic.
There you have it. He knew. We know he knew. And because she's a professional liar, well, we have Kali Maganini with a great moment in prevarication.
I still like playing it down.
Yeah.
Wait. Here we go.
The president never downplayed the virus.
I wanted to always play it down.
Yeah. But of course, she's an evangelical Christian of some sort, I suppose. And that means it's okay if she lies like a rug, and then as long as she turns around and says, "Sorry, Jesus!" And Jesus says, "No worries, honey. You're fine. You're forgiven." But But I don't know. Maybe I've got a different point of view on this. We'll find out. And, of course, the reason we're finding this out today is, again, because Bob Woodward is selling a new book, and the new book is called Rage. That is an unpaid product placement. Apparently, also in the book, Trump on tape explains that Kim Jong-un is far beyond smart. He tells me everything. And went on to give him the lurid details about how he murdered his own uncle.
I thought that was so cool.
No, he didn't say that. He says Kim Jong-un described Barack Obama as an asshole. And he went on and referred to the top brass, the military, the generals, the admirals and whatnot of the United States military. Well, he said, and again, there's tape.
My fucking generals are a bunch of pussies. They care more about their alliances than they do about trade deals.
Bob Woodward also says that former Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, quote, continued to harbor the secret belief, one that had grown rather than lessened, although unsupported by intelligence proof, that Putin had something on Trump. How else to explain the president's behavior? Coats could see no other explanation. And there were so many of these interviews that they were still going on in June. With the protests mounting following the murder of George Floyd, Woodward asked him, well, you know, do you feel like you need to understand the black experience in the United States? And he said,
no. You really drank the Kool-Aid, didn't you? Just to listen to you. Well, no, I don't feel that at all. I've done a tremendous amount for the black community, and honestly, I'm not feeling any love.
Okay, so we got all this. And some of it was going on in June. Okay, fine. But this is really one of those moments when I despise capitalism and I despise avarice. God, how old is Bob Woodward? How rich does he need to be? How much money, more money, does he need to accumulate?
Why are you doing it? How much better can you eat? What can you buy that you can't already afford?
Precisely. So in February and March, Robert Woodward, who was once upon a time in this country hailed as a hero for helping to bring down a criminal presidency in the form of Richard Nixon, not so much this time. And I'm trying to sort out why. And James in Illinois is asking the same question. But Bob... What about Bob? Why is it okay for Woodward to sit on this for 6 months? Better book sales up against an election? You're damned right, James. You're absolutely right. And that bugs the hell out of me. Now let's set some ground rules for all of this. Understand that if you're the woman in the GMC Arcadia who was driving at 45 miles an hour in the left lane as I tried to get home from Beckley today and had a Trump 2020 sticker festooned across the back of her car, it doesn't matter. If this information comes out, it doesn't matter if he knew exactly how deadly this thing was, five times as deadly as, say, you know, the flu. because there is nothing that is going to make you not vote for Donald Trump. Because you're not, you are not an American citizen acting with independent agency. You are a member of a cult, and you must do what the cult commands. So 30 to 33% of America, it wouldn't have mattered if Bob Woodward had come running out with his recorder in his hand and said, listen to this, really, no, listen, please. If he'd come running out of the White House screaming, Soylent Green is people! It wouldn't have mattered to 33%. But what might it have done for the other 67% of this country? What might it have done then? What might it have done relative to this government's response to the pandemic? Because he's been playing a very dangerous game. He knows how deadly it is,
but I wanted to play it down because I didn't want to panic.
And what Flavio points out is he didn't want to panic in the stock market. He wasn't afraid. He wasn't afraid of the maggots running out and yelling Bruga Bruga and flinging poo in the streets. No, that's never something that's going to enter his twisted, malignant contemplation to the extent he's able to contemplate anything. You think it might have made a difference in the House of Representatives? Are there any Republican senators, except for Mitt Romney, for whom this might have made a difference? Maybe a delegation of Republican senators going to the White House saying, sir, you know, because all conversations begin with sir. We're going to have to do better than this. We've got to shoot straight with the American people. Because, see, every time Anthony Fauci or some other expert said, no, this is deadly serious, he was standing up there saying, soon it'll all be gone away. It's just the flu. It's the China virus. And so Bob Woodward's not exactly way the hell up on my Christmas card list about now. I can't help but think that this country needed this information then more than we need it now, unless the only calculation is how many more books Bob Woodward can sell here with a little less than 2 months to go before the election. Hell no, Raup says. It wouldn't have made a difference, not to the maggots. Probably not to the Republicans in the Senate either. I dare say, although Robert Woodward would never ask this question, I dare say that his attitude probably changed when he saw who it was killing the most of. Steve in New York pointing out, remember how he said he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue? Well, this is that. Sometimes I do grow weary, or maybe woolly, of being right so early on. We have referred to him on this program as a homicidal maniac for quite some time now. And this is the confirmation. The President of the United States is a homicidal maniac. He is a psychopath. Or something similar. And no one, nowhere, can do a damn thing about it. Elbert in Rhode Island writes, Bob Woodward's previous book, Fear, was a great book. Hopefully I will get to read his new book soon. I love the last sentence of Fear. A lawyer was about to resign from a job representing Trump, but he didn't have the courage to tell Trump the real reason for leaving his job. The last sentence is, you're a fucking liar. Again, the Parthian shot, not even taken. I said that there's 33% of the country that knowing that he's a homicidal maniac wouldn't matter at all to. I mean, there's tape of him. How does he say fake news? Bob Woodward savaged him to a certain extent in Fear, and yet he's still sitting down and getting interviews? Well, that's because of President Narcissist. It's cracked to him. But 33% of this country simply does not give a flying fuck. And so you get a note like this from Kyle in Kentucky Stan. For the enjoyment of the horn community, I'm going to pass on the wisdom of my maggot father that he so eloquently laid out this morning. Joe Biden is being controlled by the Democratic Socialist Communists who want to have secular rule, which is illegal in this country because the Constitution provides for Judeo-Christian values to be upheld by the government, and so if Biden is elected, we will have totalitarian rule like Venezuela before the end of his first month in office. That was wild reading it silently earlier today, and it just gets more bizarre when you say it all out loud. The good part, Kyle observes, is even his younger children can see right through this obvious insanity. And he's making them into members of the left-leaning voting bloc when their time comes in real time. But Jesus Christ! Who want to have secular rule? When that is the entirety and sum and substance of the Constitution of the United States. That we will not let religious dogma inveigle itself into our governmental structure so that we won't have religious bloodbaths such as Europe had as the Reformation took place. And frankly, even before the Reformation. Albigensians? Anyone? Cathars? Gnostics? Right. Kyle said, I give you credit for reading that with a straight face. Tweren't easy, Kyle. Tweren't easy. But Kyle wasn't making it up as he went along. What you just heard from Kyle can be heard in maggot living rooms all over this country. Judeo-Christian values are nowhere to be found in the Constitution of the United States, but then again, you know that. No religious values are to be found anywhere in the Constitution. But again, you know that. But this country is so poisoned that I fear a majority of America may not know that. May not know that at all. I was pulling through a drive-thru today and I got a have a blessed day from the woman at the window, and, well, Ferg was with me, so I didn't, but, yeah, it was that close to, hail Satan to you, ma'am. Oh, and, this. Bob! I decided to go over to the local eatery near work today for lunch. Not far from where I was seated were a couple of women wearing bonnets. They were very religious as they proceeded with a prayer before getting on to a goblin their food. They prayed loud enough so that all those seated nearby could hear them pray for our wonderful president, Donald J. Trump, and with these women, I assume the J stood for Jehovah's Witness. Then they started on the Black Lives Matter mantra that states Black Lives Matter stands against the nuclear family. that garbage belief that Black Lives Matter does not believe in the traditional family. So on the way out the door, I asked the lovely ladies if the nuclear family includes a pool boy having sex with the husband's wife while the husband watches, you know, like the Jerry Falwell Jr. nuclear family. Or does the nuclear family consist of a man who cheated on his first wife with his second wife, cheated on his second wife with his third wife, and cheated on his third and current wife with a porn star and Playboy bunny while she was pregnant with his fifth kid? This president, for whom you were just praying, has had three wives. Is that what your nuclear family looks like? And by the way, ladies, do you think your tax dollars should go toward paying lawyers to defend this president who has several women accusing him of sexual assault and rape? I didn't wait around for the answer. This has been Joey's Journal for Prayer Meeting Wednesday, the 9th day of September, with Giraffe in deep in prayer on knees that he doesn't have for a new president. And soon. Thank you, Joey. Steve in New York notes, my jaw just dropped when you read that email from Kyle. I actually thought that was Kyle editorializing his dad's email. No such luck. Well, that's exactly what I said, Steve. Steve says, I was a little bit late tonight. Maybe you already said this. However, I have to wonder if his continuing to give these interviews, regardless of what it would reveal, is cracked to him in as much as he knows that his followers wouldn't care. Or both. Precisely. Ha 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 ha. Thanks for the laughs, Joey, says Kyle in Kentucky Stan. Flavio says Bob Woodward equals court stenographer. Pretty much. And Darlene in Connecticut observing, Woodward's technique is to ingratiate himself with and suck up to his prey. It's obvious to me and to you, Bob, but not to Trump. He's that pitiable and desperate for attention and utterly stupid. That's why an utterly stupid person can say that the military brass are all pussies because they care more about international alliances than they do trade deals. Yeah. Billable Rick says, I have no problem with the timing of the release of Bob Woodward's new book about Trump. If it had been released in the spring, it wouldn't have made a difference either electorally or from an impeachment perspective, and it would have long since disappeared down the memory hole. By releasing the book after Labor Day, the damaging disclosures will have the maximum impact electorally, since most Americans don't seriously follow politics until about 60 days before an election. So while Woodward calculated the release of his book to sell the most possible copies, it also will, hopefully, inflict the maximum damage against Trump among casual voters. God, I think we're on a unicorn hunt, Billable Rick. I remain skeptical of much of anything turning them away, unless it's something that happens directly to them. Yeah. There is a brief mention of God in the Constitution. It ends with, in the year of our Lord, doesn't it? I don't know. The Horn Ad Hoc Research Department will have to get after that, Randy. Thank you to Jeremy in Vermont. Thank you very kindly for getting us started. We are down to $85 to go on Paul from Parts Unknown's Our Allies Are Many challenge. And again, if we can knock that out, it'll get us down to $225 to go to come even with Wednesday. Thank you, Jeremy. Hope you get some company soon. As to Michelle Bachman, Silent R. Lamar will be getting a note from Ron and Raleigh's lawyers. Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought a woman could wear a hat indoors. Then why does Michelle Bachman take her pointed hat off? I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too. Steve in New York notes, I'm getting the feeling that the fuck tanks for more and more people in the Horn family have suddenly gone dry after actual confirmation of what we've been saying. No, we have fucks left to give, Steve. I think it's more that our ability to be surprised has been completely overwhelmed and depleted and defeated. At least that was my feeling earlier today when I saw the news breaking of this recording and these assertions. I just wasn't surprised. And I don't think many of us were. There was, of course, the usual cacophony of pearl-clutching and hand-wringing. Take, for instance, former Homeland Security official Elizabeth Newman. She was interviewed on MSNBC by Nicole Wallace today. She said that she was relieved to hear the recording of Trump saying he deliberately downplayed the danger of the coronavirus. Because it would, she imagined, that by hearing his own words, the American people would somehow be less subject to the fake news claims from all over the White House. Then again, consider Kayleigh McEnany. The president never downplayed it at all. Yeah. But do let's remember Ms. Newman worked happily along in that horrific hellscape, the Department of Homeland Security, until she got to her breaking point. Right?
Files by the Washington Post, including disturbing words from Trump about race. Here's what the president said on June 19th when Woodward asked him about white privilege.
But let me ask you this. I mean, we share one thing in common. We're white privileged. My father was a lawyer and a judge in Illinois, and we know what your dad did. And do you have any sense that that privilege has isolated and put you in a cave to a certain extent, as it put me and I think lots of white privileged people in a cave, and that we have to work our way out of it to understand the anger and the pain, particularly black people, feel in this country?
Do you see? No, you really drank the Kool-Aid, didn't you? Listen to you. Wow. No, I don't feel that at all.
The Post reports, quote, in another conversation about race on July 8th, Trump complained about his lack of support among black voters, saying, quote, I've done a tremendous amount for the black community, he told Woodward, and honestly, I'm not
feeling any love, sure. Let's get to Elizabeth Newman.
It's absolutely consistent with what I experienced in January. I was actually relieved when it was reported that he had the audio recording so we could finally hear it directly instead of the spin that we usually hear from the White House. Multiple people were ringing the alarm bells in January saying we needed to lean in, we needed to activate the plans that we have had in place for 15 years, and to do so requires consistent communication to the public. I thought the White House's response this afternoon that he was just, he didn't want to cause panic, that this is what leadership is you're looking out for your people and making sure they don't panic. That is contradictory to what all of our plans when it comes to response, whether you're talking specifically about a pandemic or any type of other threat, a terrorist threat, or a natural hazard, all of our plans call for clear, consistent communication in a timely manner through designated points of contact who are educated about whatever the threat is. And while you see at points in our government an attempt to do that, an attempt to have Dr. Fauci or Dr. Birx be that spokesperson, the president has just trampled all over their message and created so much confusion. But let's go back to the revelation today that he didn't want to panic people. The way that you don't panic people is you give them the facts. You speak clearly about what we don't. Medical community, the scientific community was telling us we needed to be doing at that time.
Yeah. And how do you test an assertion like Elizabeth Newman's? Well, history is a useful tool. What if Winston Churchill, and understand, whenever I bring up Winston Churchill, it goes as read that he was a horrible, horrible racist. But he was the man who was in charge of the United Kingdom in that time. And the one thing we can say is that he spoke bluntly and honestly. What did he say? Blood, toil, tears, and sweat? What did he say? We will fight them on the beaches. We will fight them in the streets. We will fight them in our homes. What if during the Blitz, he had stepped out and said,
those really aren't bombs that are falling. That's fake news.
What if that had been the case? What would it have done to the will to survive of the people of the United Kingdom if he had deliberately divided the people of the sceptered realm among themselves, between those who thought that those were fake German bombs falling all over England and those who wished to deal with reality? What would that have done? Well, we know what happened here. We know that in downplaying his own words, the danger of the virus, that he divided this country into those who thought it was real and those who thought it was not. While I was watching Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice's press conference today,
now in no way, shape, form, or fashion do I want you to think I don't want us playing football.
Oh, Jesus. I made the observation because, you know, just commenting on the rolling comment thread as I watched. This one woman who I checked her profile. She works for a quackropractor over in Beckley. And she said, I ain't gonna get tested because I ain't sick. And I pointed out that asymptomatic spread is a real thing, that you can have the virus and not have symptoms and be spreading the virus. And I got a laughing emoji from this damned fool. We wouldn't have the people barking and hooting and grunting in the streets about how the HIPAA says, I don't have to tell you why I don't wear their mask, If this malicious homicidal maniac had not deliberately divided the country into reality and maggots. It wouldn't be happening. Megan pointing out, you know who would not have panicked people and prepared for a pandemic far before it reached our shores? Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, and I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. addressing Trump. Kyle in Kentucky Stan says, you fucking homicidal racist piece of shit. Jesus, I fucking hate him. Careful with the hate. Careful with the hate, Kyle, because it can become consuming in its own right. Yeah. Going back to Woodward for a moment, Flavio points out, why I'm not exactly a fan of Bob Woodward, royal stenographer. Woodward wrote four fawning books on W with rousing titles. Bush at War, 2002. Plan of Attack, 2004. State of Denial, 2006. The War Within, A Secret White House History, 2006 to 2008. Woodward believed the Bush administration's claims of Iraqi weapons of mass destruction prior to the war. During an appearance on Larry King Live, he was asked by a telephone caller, suppose we go to war and go into Iraq and there are no weapons of mass destruction. Woodward responded, I think the chance of that happening is about zero. There's just too much there. Woodward later admitted his error, saying, I think I dropped the ball here. I should have pushed much, much harder on the skepticism about the reality of WMD. In other words, I should have said, hey, look, the evidence is not as strong as they were claiming. That's called closing the barn door after the horses are long, long gone. Yeah. Stephen, New York. I ain't going to get tested because I ain't sick. So I wonder if that woman obtains periodic breast exams to make sure she doesn't have cancer or she catches it early. Well, no, she's probably washed in the blood of Jesus. And she's got a little girl who's a freshman in high school and a son who's a senior, and she's so proud of him because he's playing football again. Yes. And they're going to in-school classes. And see, here's the thing. Until the virus touches her personally, she will not give a damn, and she will go on saying that she understands the CDC better than Anthony Fauci does. Because, you know, she works for a chiropractor. And we're tested too much. And there's people out there, they've sent it, you know what? They have sent in tests that ain't ever even been used. And they come back testing positive. That's what it is. That's what we're dealing with here. That's what's going to make survival harder and harder and harder and harder here. That's why I'm sweating bullets, trying to figure out a way to get Ferg started in an apartment over there. Because it's not going to miraculously go away. And I love my son with all my being. But he simply is incapable of being mindful of the risks that he is taking. And he's not just taking risks with his own health, but with that of his mother and me. And that is a grim thing to contemplate. Stephen, New York, the big dick, Nixon. Always remember, others may hate you, but those who hate you don't win unless you hate them, and then you destroy yourself. Thank you, Kyle. Kyle just jumped in, taking us down to $75 to go on the Our Allies Are Many challenge. And then, wow, Stephen jumped in. The challenge is met. All from Parts Unknown's challenge is met. And we now have only $100 to go to get caught up with this far into this week. Thank you, Stephen. I cannot thank you enough. And thanks to everybody jumping in. Thank you this evening to Jeremy, and thank you to Kyle. Thank you so very much indeed. Darlene with a note, Politico, GOP congressman spent $70,000 in campaign cash on meals. Holy shit. Should we be surprised coming from this idiot in particular and the Republicans generally? $70,000? What did the damn meals consist of? Shark fin soup? Blowfish soup? Oh, wait. Pangolin scales dip? This would be Representative Mike Turner of Ohio. 370 food-related expenditures since 2017 that he paid for with campaign cash. Yeah. Of course, he's a big maggot. Writing at Politico, Allie Mutnick describes dinners at international sushi bars, steakhouses, and a wine boutique, a $220 meal in London, a $300 meal in a posh hotel in Belgium on Boxing Day. Representative Mike Turner's used campaign funds for hundreds of trips to restaurants and occasionally to stay at lavish hotels, according to a Politico analysis of the Iowa Republicans' campaign finance filings over the past 3.5 years. $70,000 from campaign accounts since 2017 to fund meals and some 370 meetings. Individual receipts run around $12 to a few hundred dollars, but ethics experts say that there's a consistent pattern. Turner uses his donors to subsidize his personal dining costs, expensing an average of 2 meals a week. He's been in Congress for 9 terms. He represents southwestern Ohio. And at present, he's struggling to retain his seat because House Democrats have put a target on his district. And his opponent, Desiree Timms, out-fundraised him in the last quarter. Having been caught, Mike Turner responded, "It's a political hit job initiated by my opponent." Mason DePalma, his campaign manager, said, "All of Mike Turner or his team's expenses in the 18 years he served in Congress have always been legally and publicly disclosed and reported." Mm-hmm. And then there's this. This rolled out earlier in the day. It's a real piece of work. North Carolina Senator Thom Tillis, who is also struggling to be reelected, even in North Carolina, Stan. Well, a woman named Bev Veals of Carolina Beach, North Carolina, who has survived cancer on 3 separate occasions, had become nervous. She called her senator's office because she was afraid she was going to lose her coverage. And she said she wanted to know that she would have coverage, some kind of coverage, if she was to lose the health care coverage that she presently has. Well, naturally, if you're just a constituent, you don't get to just pick up the phone and say, "Hey, let me speak to Thom." No. At best, you will speak to some functionary, some aide or legislative assistant. Right? Sure. And that's what exactly what happened in this instance. She got She got Senator Tillis's aid. And then the next thing you know, she was being lectured by that selfsame aide. And if you ever, well, no, I don't want to put it in too absolute terms, but this is what Republicans being Republicans sound like. And it's a hell of a thing. Because, see, according to this assistant to Tom Tillis, it's exactly the same as buying a shirt. You heard that right. So when Bev Veals called, she got this legislative assistant, and the legislative aide, Republican through and through, said, yeah, just like if I want to go to the store and buy a new dress shirt, if I can't afford that dress shirt, I don't get to get it, said the young staffer. And Bev Veal said, but health care is something people need, especially if they have cancer. And the staffer replied, well, you got to find a way to get it, which is another way of saying, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, even if you don't have any damn boots. Bev Veals asked, so what do I do in the meantime, sir? Sounds like something you're going to have to figure out. And then the shitstorm started raining on Tom Tillis. At which point in time, he entered damage control mode.
The way Mrs. Veals was talked to by a staff assistant in our Washington office was completely inappropriate and violates the code of conduct Senator Tillis has for his staff, which is why immediate disciplinary action has been taken.
Now let's remember maybe part of why Ms. Veals called. Because the president, for whom Tom Tillis spends the majority of his waking hours on his knees, right now, as we speak, has his wartime consigliere, the criminal enterprise known as Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr, in court, arguing on behalf of the United States government in conjunction with maggot attorneys general from all over the country, one of whom is my attorney general, pill pushing Patty Morrissey, the guy who profited monstrously from the opioid crisis here in West Virginia. Well, they're in court arguing that the entirety of the Affordable Care Act should be done away with, eliminated. That because the maggot Congress and the maggot in chief did away with the individual mandate that everyone carry coverage, that vitiates the Affordable Care Act altogether. And that anyone who has Affordable Care Act coverage should be stripped of it, whatever it is, of whatever value it is to them. So I don't know what the code of conduct is in Senator Tillis's office, but it damn sure has nothing to do with making with trying to make sure that people like his constituents can continue to get treatment if another doctor looks at her and says, well, looks like you're going to have to beat cancer a fourth time, Bev. This is a woman who's been through a medical bankruptcy. She and her husband were put out of a job because of the pandemic. And her health care is at risk because, well, that was some of that employer-provided health care that we were so routinely assured in the innocent early phases of this campaign. That employer-provided health care coverage that everybody in America just loves, 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 loves. Yeah, until you don't have a job anymore and then you don't have insurance anymore. Interviewed by WRAL, Bev Veals said, we need our legislators to listen to us and help us solve this problem because it's not just my problem. Not being able to afford health care. It's the problem of hundreds of thousands of North Carolinians and, hey, millions of Merkins. And, of course, North Carolina is one of the 12 states remaining that still are deeply offended by the idea of accepting free money from the federal government and expanding the Medicaid program. And as long as she and her husband don't have jobs, if she loses her health care coverage, the Medicaid expansion would cover Ms. Veals and her husband, at least in theory. And there's that, and then there's the 27 or so million people who can't qualify for Medicaid and are not deemed okay to purchase in the Affordable Care Act marketplace and get a policy with a $10,000 deductible that they pay near $1,000 a month for and requires a $1,600 a day copay for hospital stays. In other words, an insurance policy that's, for all intents and purposes, no insurance at all. Here's Tillis's spokes creeps defense.
When he was Speaker of the House in North Carolina, Senator Tillis inherited a Medicaid program that was mismanaged and plagued with overspending and inefficiency. Expanding Medicaid at the time would have been a promise that the state wouldn't have been able to keep, requiring cuts to the program that would have harmed patients that states like New York and California have already been forced to make. Instead, Senator Tillis worked to strengthen the state's Medicaid program to deliver quality health care to patients, and the reason that North Carolina is in a position to discuss expansion is because of Senator Tillis's leadership. Bullshitty, said the Robin, and he turned and walked away. Because, you see, at most, 10% of the Medicaid expansion would have had to come from North Carolina's budget. And they could probably shake the sofa cushions out in the governor's mansion and find that. And it winds up actually being a net positive in terms of state budgets because, among other things, it saves desperately needed rural hospitals and keeps people employed in those hospitals. And you know, anytime a southern white senator mouth the words New York and California, you know they're lying.
because California is not making harmful decisions and cuts to Medicaid. So, you know, it's just another day, just another soulless, corrupt Republican. But hey, back to the effusive optimism of former Homeland Security official Elizabeth Newman.
Of saving lives, but also helping our economy to recover faster, because we wouldn't have had as sharp of a public health concern, because we would have contained it early on. It's just, it's so devastating how incompetent he is, and he cannot continue to be our president. Too many lives have already been lost.
Elizabeth, let me just push you a little bit on the verb tense. I mean, it would seem to me that he's still getting people killed. And after our last conversation, you were talking about Al-Qaeda being a threat. And now the threat is very clearly terrorists, domestic terrorists who believe in a white supremacist ideology. We talked about how he doesn't want to see those kinds of warnings. The White House rebuffed them. There's a new whistleblower, and I'm going to ask you about that before. Actually, and this one's on Russia, but this constant sort of shutting down of the airing of threats to the homeland is staggering, and it makes the sins and the crimes for which he was impeached almost look you know, like they're just on the shelf with a lot of other ways that Donald Trump functioned. I mean, you couldn't bring him threats to the homeland if they were from domestic terrorists who were white supremacists. You can't bring him any threats to U.S. national security if it comes from Russia. You can't bring him public health information if he doesn't like it or if it goes against what he's saying in his two-hour-long briefings that are full of lies, lies that kill people. I guess my question to you is, he's still telling those lies. He's still responsible for people getting sick or staying sick or not wearing masks or going to parties without masks on. The super spreader events are almost always people who don't believe the science. And he is modeling the most sort of public science denial behavior in the country as the president. Why aren't there more people like yourself leaving and speaking out about that?
Well, Nicole, I completely agree with you. It is a problem that is continuing. And that's part of the reason I decided to speak out. It's COVID. It's the white supremacist threat. It's election interference. If we have four more years of this man, who knows what types of decisions are going to be brought to his desk? And he will answer the question based on do they like me or not? Do they stroke my ego? Does this help me with my base? Those are the ways that he approaches national security questions. It is fundamentally an abuse of power. It is absolutely a dereliction of duty. And I go back to, and I've said this multiple times, like when I evaluate a candidate, it's policy, character, and competence. I knew going into 2016 he lacked character. I was kind of hoping he had more competence than he clearly has, and I was totally wrong about that. And then I kind of was hoping that we could steer him in the right direction with policy. But it turns out that if you lack that character and if you lack competence, there's no amount of adults in the room that can steer you in the right direction. Like he is destroying our country to its core, to its fabric with his rhetoric. And my concern is that that will eventually manifest itself in other physical threats, other whether it's you have competing political activist groups that are increasingly violent and increasingly going at each other in that violence. And we've already had three deaths in the last couple of weeks. We're going to see more of that because his rhetoric is designed to instill fear. It's designed to cause more violence. And it's recruiting more people to that violent cause. And we're just going to continue to see more of this.
Yeah. Of course, for some considerable amount of time, Elizabeth Newman was perfectly happy with all of that. Let's remember. She's only come to the foot of the cross in fairly recent weeks and months. Steve in New York points out, no, the threat is not white supremacists. the threat is Donald J. Trump. Donald J. Trump is the greatest threat to American freedom and our form and system of government that this country has probably ever faced. And that includes the Second World War. That includes the Cold War. That includes the Civil War. Because never before have we had an active adversary of constitutional governance actually in place in the office of the President of the United States. Plain and simple. And it goes on and on. By the way, Ron in Raleigh says I had a tad too much corn pone in my Tom Tillis story. I don't claim that jackass. He was born in Jacksonville, Florida. Remember, don't wash your hands if you work in a restaurant. Tillis and Burr. Why am I so lucky? I know. Silent R. Lamar, the person you reference about not testing, just for a laugh, Ms. Thang is that person at the back of the herd, under the impression when the herd turns around, she'd be in front, and since she's in the rear, she didn't hear the news. We're not going back because we're just a little ahead of the beast who eats us. Run for your life. Or as the punchline to the old joke goes, one redneck looks at the other, taking off his boots, and says, I don't have to outrun the bear. All I have to outrun is you. Precisely. Stephen, New York, old Thom's health care plan. Thoughts and prayers. No. It's don't get sick, and if you do get sick, die quickly. That remains the Republican health care plan. What could possibly cost so much money for Mike Turner of Ohio? I know, says Ron in Raleigh. Several bowls of snake urine soup, the most expensive soup in the world. We found it in Tokyo. Snake urine soup. Mm-hmm. $10,000 a bowl. And just because sometimes you have to say this, Stephen New York says, and not necessarily speaking to the Horn Family Community Congregation, but any potential lurkers, hey, all you members of the Unicorn Sparkle Fart Powered Purity Patrol, you still think Hillary was just as bad or worse than Trump? You fuckers have the chutzpah to come out and tell the families of the 190,000-plus dead Americans she would have downplayed it? You want to try that? Oh, I know. Hey, thanks very kindly to Pat. We really appreciate you jumping in. Pat just took us down to only $100 to go to finish the evening. Thank you, Pat. Thank you tremendously. Much appreciated. So, you know, maybe in the next, maybe we'll actually catch up and that'd be grand. And Steve says, I think Donald J. Trump is the greatest threat to our very survival. Well, there's an argument in favor of that, too. And a little bit of turning backward toward a topic from last night. Attorney General Bill Pepe the Frog Barr inserting himself, probably shouldn't put it that way, into the civil lawsuit, the defamation suit by E. Jean Carroll against Nitwit Nero. From the Vice article on the DOJ taking over Trump's defense, as University of Texas law professor Steve Vladek pointed out, the government itself can't be sued for defamation. Just to be clear, DOJ's argument that Trump was acting within the scope of his employment when he defamed E. Jean Carroll is not an effort to take over defense of the suit. It's an effort to have the suit dismissed. The Department of Justice did not immediately return a request for comment. In other words, he can do it. Just like, and I don't know why this has not been said more plainly out in the multimillionaire media. It needs to be. Just like if there were 100 FBI agents, and remember, cops, FBI agents, and the like are empowered to arrest without a warrant when they witness a crime committed before their very eyes. And so Donald J. Trump could, in cold blood, murder someone and be witnessed doing it by 100 different law enforcement officers, and not one of them could place him under arrest for the commission of that murder because of the Department of Justice guidance. And so there was Nitwit Nero in North Carolina yesterday, smack dab in the middle of a pandemic, bragging about drawing a packed house, showed up in Winston-Salem, and held a super spreader event.
It was beyond what we had in terms of enthusiasm, beyond what we had 4 years ago.
Now, in the state of North Carolina, current pandemic rules say that you can't have a public gathering of more than 25 people indoors or 50 people outdoors. Well, he trampled on that because, again, he's above the law. No matter what old Balls and Strikes dead-eyed John Roberts says by way of trying to placate a terrified nation. And now he's off to Michigan, where he will do it again, much to the consternation of Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Round and round she goes. Oh, but it is prayer meeting Wednesday, and I got a prayer meeting Wednesday story. Because, well, we used the Michelle Bachmann black transgender Marxist story yesterday. Black transgender Marxist fascist Rosicrucian Freemason learned elders of Zion Illuminati papists. Right. So I had to root around to find a sufficiently prayer meeting Wednesday worthy story. And I found it, of course, in Texas. Yep. Couple months back, some reports began circulating about declassifying some information regarding UFO sightings. There's a fascinating Netflix documentary, a couple of years old, I think, on the otherwise reasonable and sane people, people like military pilots who have seen unexplained, unidentified flying objects in the sky. Remember, UFO doesn't necessarily mean, you know, the multi-limbed amorphous beings from Norblap 9. A UFO is exactly that, an unidentified object that happens to be flying. And so, with mention being made about what the New York Times referred to as off-world vehicles not made on this earth. And again, this goes back to mid-July. Despite Pentagon statements that it disbanded a once covert program to investigate unidentified flying objects, the effort remains underway. Renamed and tucked inside the Office of Naval Intelligence, where officials continue to study mystifying encounters between military pilots and unidentified aerial vehicles. Pentagon officials will not discuss the program, which is not classified, but deals with classified matters. Yet it appeared last month in a Senate committee report outlining spending on the nation's intelligence agencies for the coming year. The report said the program, the Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon Task Force, was to standardize collection and reporting on sightings of unexplained aerial vehicles and was to report at least some of its findings to the public every 6 months. For more than a decade, the Pentagon program has been conducting classified briefings for congressional committees, aerospace company executives, and other government officials, according to interviews with program participants and unclassified briefing documents. I remember hearing this story, and you may have as well, What you may not have heard was the follow-up. The follow-up that came from a rather interesting, let's say interesting, Republican maggot member of the state legislature there. Texas State Representative Jonathan Stickland. Yeah. Jonathan Stickland heard the story and immediately ran to Twitter. His little thumbs, well, they're not little, they're actually rather large thumbs. His somewhat more than typically sized thumbs fairly aflame to get to thumbing in some words into the Twitter machine. And so he thumbed them in and then he hit send. If aliens are real, salvation through Jesus Christ is the only way they enter heaven. Mm-hmm. Now, if you were to look up Jonathan Stickland, you would find him describing himself as a Christian conservative liberty-loving Republican. Sit, Liberty, sit. Woof. Imagine that. The hubris of thinking that there would be some sort of salvation worth having for someone from another planet, another solar system, fuck, another galaxy, and that salvation could only be obtained by believing in a murdered Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life. Well, you know, it made perfect sense to State Representative Jonathan Stickland. But then again, maybe that's exactly what the amorphous multi-limbed aliens from Norblap 9 are looking for. I knew there was a reason I was hanging on to that story. Yeah. And so, I don't know. Jesus, can you imagine converting space aliens and then having them knocking on our doors? Oh, hello. I'm from Norblap 9. Do you have a moment for us to talk about Jesus' plan for your life? You don't? Get the vaporizer ray. I know. But at least that's moderately humorous. For some reason or another, I haven't seen this angle. David in South Carolina, Stan, tells us, for some reason, Precious Lindsay is being blamed for pushing the Woodward interviews. This is coming from the White House crew. I have no idea what, if anything, this means. Huh. Odd. I guess TuneIn is misbehaving. News Ninja Gene letting me know. TuneIn says, this station is not available in your country. What gives? Still getting the podcast feed from Apple. I got nothing, Gene. That's odd. Maybe it's a tune-in thing. The best way to get the stream is always just to go to headon.live and go from there. Barring that, going directly to the source at whiterosesociety.org. Yeah, I did know that, Ron and Raleigh pointing out that Harry Reid was deeply involved in the UFO investigation as Senate liaison to the Pentagon Study Group. Naval Intelligence has been the repository of UFO info since Admiral Bobby Inman was in charge. Mm-hmm. Porter Anderson reporting that Jim Acosta told Wolf Blitzer, oh dear, this is where it gets complicated. A source is telling me at this hour that Lindsey Graham, close confidant of the president, was urging him to do these interviews with Woodward. Lots of finger-pointing in Trump world over whether real Donald Trump should have done this. Well, whether Lindsey told him to do it or not, he was probably itching to do it because it meant that someone was paying attention to him. This is the most important thing in the world to a malignant narcissist. Jeremy with an observation. Bob, if space aliens exist, which I think they do, they come from possible light years away, if not more, maybe not even carbon forms of life. Wouldn't they just laugh at us? We can't beat COVID, let alone fly across our own solar system. Jesus Christ. Well, he can't fly across the solar system either, Jeremy. I started watching, Agnes and I did, trying to watch a single season show last night, and we gave up after episode two. If you've seen it and it gets better, let me know. We'll give it a second chance. Generally speaking, Hugh Laurie is a fantastic actor, and there were a couple of moments of, huh, in it, but we tried to watch Avenue 5, which is supposedly a comedy about a space liner, a luxury space liner, that goes off course. Because of a series of accidents. And in a way, it looked like what, because, you know, the idea being that space travel had become something of a big deal tourist industry, the way the cruise line industry is here on our home planet. And so the people aboard the space liner are constantly being hustled to upgrade and spend more money, et cetera, just like you are on a cruise ship. And in many ways, it struck me that maybe the message they were trying to send, the name of the family that owned the space liner company was Judd. And I was trying to figure out a way if that was, sort out whether that was just a single syllable name that was a stand-in for, I don't know, Musk. Or Gates. But probably Musk. Or Elon. Because it was the idea of space travel was completely capitalized and libertarianized so that everything necessary to survive in space was subject to fretting about the relationship between cost and profit. Again, I don't recommend the program unless it gets dramatically better. In episode 3 or whatever. Okay, that tiny little bright dot was not the sun in the photograph from Sparky that I mentioned earlier. He says that was the flash from my camera picking up ash particles. Well, you did a fine job, Sparky, approximating the sun. I don't know. Brother Deacon Asa asking a salient question. Is Miss Elizabeth Newman the author of the Lodestar memo? She is, isn't she? Don't know. Although that person has promised to come forward, what, before the election? Brother Deacon Asa also says, I'm going to have to call bullshit on Brother Jonathan Stickland's assertion. The aliens are too much into anal tentacle fucking from the footage I've seen. Jesus would never open heaven's back door for him.
Knock, knock, knocking on.
And do you know that they were... Holy shit, that reminds me. They were actually playing that at the Super Spreader event yesterday in North Carolina, Stan. Knocking on heaven's door. No, really. At least somebody in the Trump camp has a truly sick and twisted sense of humor. But Jesus would never open heaven's back door for him. That gets you a cowbell, Brother Deacon Asa. That's definitely cowbell material. So here we are at the halfway point of the program. This is a conversation program. It's not a filibobster program. If you'd like to be involved in what's going on here, feel free to ring in. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And over on the stress line, that's 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, okay? Jump in with anything that's on your mind. If you want to shout to the uncaring heavens about the fact that he downplayed a pandemic and got 180,000-plus people killed, well, that's cool. We can do that. Steve says, subject line, Lindsey Graham. You know, it occurs to me maybe Lindsey was the one pushing the interviews. If that's the case, maybe Lindsey is the one who wrote the anonymous editorial in the New York Times a couple of years ago. Maybe he was trying to sabotage Trump. Or maybe this is just my wishful thinking and I'm full of shit. Well, never refer to yourself as full of shit, Steve. You bring way too much to the conversation for that to be the case. But, well, we now have two competing theories for Lodestar. Elizabeth Newman and Lindsey. But if Lindsey was anonymous coming out, wow, isn't that a double entendre in this circumstance? Coming out would be probably hazardous to his health. As to knocking on heaven's door, Jeremy in Vermont says, I hope it was the Guns N' Roses version. Axl is world-renowned for being an asshole, but he hates this administration. I don't know which version it was. I just noted that I saw along the way where someone said, oh my God, they're playing Knocking on Heaven's Door in the middle of a pandemic at a Trump rally in North Carolina. Science Fiction TV, Lee in New York says, 1, The Orville, 2, Star Trek New Voyages, 3, Star Trek Continues. New Voyages gets good after the first few. I'll be checking those out. We're in need of something to watch. We started watching last night because I was drawn to it like I'm off the flame. The Righteous Gemstones. And it's showing some potential. Generally speaking, if I see that John Goodman is in the cast, I'll give it a watch simply because he and Stephen Root are two of the very best actors that this country has to offer right now. Darlene observing, Lindsey is too chicken shit to be anonymous. I tend to share Darlene's assessment. I don't know. Ron in Raleigh says, what'd you think? Did the Dune trailer make you want to reach for your wallet to pay the price of admission? That's a tough call. I mean, and not just... because of the content, but because, well... it depends on whether it goes to... theater or straight to stream. But it does look interesting. And it will not be, you know, it's not going to be a David Lynch movie this time. And among other things, apparently there's already a spinoff, Bene Gesserit Dune, about the Bene Gesserit Dune, the Sisterhood. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, what a cast. Javier Bardem. Jason Momoa. Yeah. I don't know. David, in South Carolina, Stan says, I'm interested in the Lindsey controversy because of the Senate race. What could this do, if anything? Well, if they're trying to dump it on Lindsey, and that's a measure of how desperate they are in the White House to find someone to blame, and dumping on Lindsey would indicate that they're okay with him being thrown to the wolves. And that's how it always is in Trump world. There is no loyalty. All loyalties run to Trump. No loyalties run from Trump to anyone else. It's just that simple. You got to figure, though, that would monumentally piss off Chinless Mitch. Because that's damned well Mitch's majority that they'd be fucking with. So, watch this space, as the saying goes. Randy in PA says, if you've dealt with a narcissist within your family, there are videos on YouTube by a Dr. Les Carter and also by a Dr. Romani, as well as one other woman who had an ex who was one. It might prove illuminating. As to knocking on heaven's door, James in Illinois says, you know damn well Mr. Zimmerman is not down with the Don playing his music at any price, unless it's all of it. Yet, yeah, Don, you can play that one song, but I want it all. What do you mean you have to get permission? Yeah, I know. Laborman with a reminder. Don't hear very much about climate disruption. Record highs here Monday and snow today. Record early snow in New Mexico. You have record early snow in other parts of the country too. 1 minute they're burning up, the next minute you're up to your ankles in snow. Of course, I've been mentioning it. How many times of late? No matter how many pandemics you're under, nature still bats last. Exactly. And that's the reminder. Oh, and just in terms of pure numbers, from a report released earlier this month, because now we're a little over a month into the, or a little over a week into the month of September, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Children's Hospital Association, in a joint report, about 500,000 children in the United States have so far tested positive for COVID-19. And that, of course, is just the results from the children who have been tested. The report found a total of 513,415 children with positive test results. 70,000 of those came between August 20th and September 3rd. That's a 16% increase in cases among children from the previous 2 weeks. The highest percentage increases in child COVID-19 cases were found in Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Indiana, Missouri, and Kentucky. Interesting, because all but one of those states have Republican Republican governors, and all of those states have Republican legislatures. And, of course, South Dakota notoriously has Kristi Noem, who would not care if everybody in South Dakota got it, as long as she could still vote for herself and remain governor. She is a reminder that back in 2008, when we said, oh my God, Sarah Palin is the stupidest Republican woman ever to draw breath, that when you whisper that kind of information into the ear of the universe, the goddess of irony will shout back, hold my beer. Oh, as to Avenue 5, Robert in Australia says, I sat through the whole thing. It doesn't get better. I kept waiting for a joke. You're better off watching Aniara, which has the same plot based on an epic poem from the 1950s. It's depressing from beginning to end, but it's meant to be. A kilometer-by-kilometer spacecraft goes off course after losing its fuel and is locked on a 5-million-year voyage to the star Cassiopeia. As for converting aliens to Christianity, that's all we need. Daleks door-knocking on a Sunday. Convert, 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 or be exterminated. Yeah. So I guess the happy news about kids and COVID is that, according to the report, kids getting it remains rare. Less than 10% of the more than 6 million cases in the U.S., you know, that we've tested. And 18 whole states in the U.S. report that no children have died of it. Yeah, oops. There's a lot more than 18 states in the U.S. The two groups, the Child Hospital Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, said severe illness due to COVID-19 is rare among children. However, states should continue to provide detailed reports on COVID-19 cases, testing, hospitalizations, and mortality by age and race ethnicity so that the effects of COVID-19 on children's health can be documented and monitored. Well, rare is not the same thing as non-existent. And there are children in tiny caskets in the ground now. And those deaths are, in fact, attributable to Donald J. Trump. The J stands for juvenile mortality. And now that we're going back to school, we'll probably see more. Flor Munoz is the author of the American Association of Pediatrics' new recommendations, issuing a statement yesterday. Dr. Munoz said, as a pediatrician, I'm very concerned about the health of children and their families this fall if these two potentially deadly viruses, the flu and COVID, are circulating in the community at the same time. And I've got a governor in West Virginia who just can't help me. Now, we got to keep these children safe. In no way, shape, form, or fashion am I saying that we're not going to keep our children safe. And we want our children back in school, and we want to play football. Yeah. We in New York, 500,000 children tested positive. Who says American students can't pass tests? Yeah. And yes, Jeremy, you may rest assured, David in South Carolina, Stan, informs us, the rally was playing the Guns N' Roses version of Heaven's Door, just as they played the Guns N' Roses version of Live and Let Die earlier this year. Pissed Axel right off back then. Ron in Raleigh says, I'm three episodes into Away, the Hillary Swank vehicle about the first Mars mission. So far, so good. That's another one to jot down. Admit it, says Jeremy. If aliens do periodically pass over our little blue time machine, they take the same tact that we humans do if we visit the zoo. Caution, don't feed the animals. They could try and eat you. Or just simply, they're very, very dirty creatures. You don't want to get too close to them. Oh, but I already watched Star Trek Discovery, Lee. Lee says, I cannot believe that Pike's first officer is named number one. And, well, you know, I brought up UFOs. I get what I deserve. Because I think we want to talk about something like that just to try to get away from the identified fucking orangutan in the White House. Rusty says, if they have the tech to come here and rarely be seen or don't care if we detect them, they're only here for a good laugh. So long. And thanks for all the fish. Randy asking, was it you who told me that kids can handle much more of a viral load without themselves getting sick? That's what Paul from Parts Unknown was talking about last night. Not so much without getting sick, but that children, generally speaking, tend to carry much more highly concentrated viral loads than do adults. And children are, by definition, less hygienic than adults are because they don't have the cognitive qualities that we like to think adults do. But then again, we're probably going to have to wind up reassessing all of that in light of the behavior of far too many humans during this pandemic. You can expect numbers among children to rise. More than 1 million students started school this past Tuesday. Far too many of them starting in in-person classes. I can't believe that these poor fools are saying, oh, yay, our children got to play in the football, and our daughters got to, you know, our daughters was down there a-cheering, and the football players was a-footballing. It's a horror enough to see an adult on a respirator. It is 1 million times worse to witness that in a child. No doubt. Oh, and since yesterday, we had Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman grunting and hooting like a barn owl about the black transgender Marxists of Black Lives Matter who are trying to turn America into a communist, fascist, Rosicrucian, Papist, Freemason, Illuminati state. Enter a guy named Michael Brown, who is not that Michael Brown. Michael Brown. I'll be dipped. Darlene says she was trying to call. I'm trying, and I bet I know why it didn't work. Yeah. Well, no. Wait a minute, I know what it is. It's just plain powered off. There we go. The stress line wasn't turned on. It had run down to zero, and I had neglected to turn it back on, not realizing that you had to do that. My bad. You should be able to get through in a matter of a couple of minutes, Darlene. Now, Michael Brown is an anti-LGBTQ raver and a religious right maniac. And calls himself Dr. Brown. Don't know what he's a doctor of. And he's decided he knows what's going. He knows what's happening, and knows what the BLM is really up to. Yeah. You know, Oprah paid for a bunch of billboards around Louisville, and the idea caught on and has taken off. The Say Her Name campaign with regard to Breonna Taylor, murdered by three cops. Say Her Name. Yeah, Stephen New York says, Dr. Brown, I love his root beer. I'm partial to his cream soda, too. Diet cream soda is pretty damn good. Naturally, I can't get it down here. Well, Michael Brown, Dr. Brown, has said, when you say the name, you're also calling on the person to come forth, for those spirits to come forth and empower the movement. So it's basically witchcraft. And you think this whole thing is very Jezebelic in that regard. I had no idea that Jezebelic was a word. In terms of joining together radical feminism, attack on gender, attack on family structure, emasculating men, and then you bring in the appeal to the spirits of the dead. So I've been warning people for months, separate from the movement. It is anarchist. It is anti-Christ. Show your solidarity with black friends in different ways. Where you see injustice, confront it, but separate from the movement. See, and I see things now with mobocracy and the cancel culture and the move towards socialism. By the way, a little cancel culture emanating from the White House and calling for the termination of the reporters who verified his Trump's sliming of the military and military families and people who lost their lives serving the country. Cancel culture. And the move towards socialism, to me, it's not so much socialism versus capitalism, but socialism seeking to shut down the gospel. As I see this shift, to me, it feels like we're right at the edge of a cliff. And if the church does not respond properly now, we go over the edge. And four more years of Donald Trump's not going to save America. At best, that's a wedge in the door where the church can really cry out to God, truly repent, truly engage in the gospel, and usher in revival and awakening, because that's the hope of the nation. Dr. Brown, by the way, who probably couldn't put on a Band-Aid without committing malpractice, Dr. Brown is a guy who walked away from Judaism to become a Christian. So how about that? Even four more years of Donald Trump's not going to satisfy the theocrats. That just means that they will get to begin to accomplish their goals of forcing their religious mania on the rest of us. It was 2004 when Dr. Brown was deeply burdened by God about homosexual activism. And he recognized it as the greatest threat to freedom of religion, speech, and conscience in America. The great moral, spiritual question of this generation. Seeking to shut down the gospel. How about that? On the one hand, they claim that the avatar they worship is the most powerful being in the universe, and on the other, they're so hopelessly weak that a mere cry for justice is enough to put paid to the lot of them. Yeah. And he knows what America needs, Dr. Brown does. You want an awakening? You awaken when you open the law again and dust it off, and the people rejoice, and they have a system that governs them, and then a God who infuses it. This is missing. We have to awaken to that. I'm not talking about legalism. I'm not talking about dominionism. I'm not talking about a theocracy. I'm talking about people participating with wisdom. You're pretty much talking about Iran, asshole. Jesus. Okay, let's see. Is that you, Darlene?
Yep, that is me.
Yay! Sorry about having the phone turned off. Sometimes I forget to punch the right buttons.
Well, I'm glad I was able to let you know, and you corrected it straight away. So that's good. And here I am,
winning.
So you were talking about the kids going back to school. Well, the synchronicities are amazing with this program, but as you were talking about that, I just got a text message, a couple of them, from my sister, who has two kids in the New Milford, Connecticut school system. Her eldest went off to Boston University. I don't know how he's doing. Got to find out. She hasn't relayed any concerns about him yet. They've shut the schools down. The entire New Milford school system, which is a big, I mean, New Milford is a massive, massive community. They've shut the entire New Milford school system down for 2 days because one student came in positive, tested positive for COVID-19. And his family, I guess, all tested positive. So now they're going to do the contact tracing. So she's worried. And again, you know, again, the individual, they're not saying who and all of that, was asymptomatic. I assume it was a student. But again, things are so nuanced and complicated, which is, this country can never handle nuance. But it's like, the middle son is in my middle nephew on that side of the family is in the New Milford High School, which is a massive high school. I mean, the classes are huge. I mean, there's close to 1,000 students that graduated just in June. Well, she's worried because he could have been one of the individuals that came into contact with this particular student. His sister, she is my youngest niece that I have, is being, she's staying home. My sister and her husband decided that she was going to do remote learning, strictly remote learning, because she's an asthmatic. She suffers from childhood asthma, which I think she got from my father, who almost died from asthma as a child and has always struggled with bronchitis in his later years. He eventually grew out of the asthma, but has always had issues with his lungs. So now, you know, here's an example where the family's doing the right thing, but unintentionally, my nephew could put his own little sister at risk. If the contact tracing comes back to him in any way. So this is how serious, how serious this is. And then my nephew, had a really great question. He said, if this student who tested positive had an entire family that tested positive or was struggling with COVID-19, then why on earth did he go to school in the first place? Why was he in class, or she, or whoever it was? And I'm like, that's a really good question. You know, the entire family was positive. So, you know, and maybe it's a timing thing. I don't know. But again, it shows, you know, it just is an example of how complicated these things are. Again, the individual is asymptomatic, but that individual could infect someone who it could seriously, it could kill somebody else. This is like Russian roulette, you know, sorry, using.
Yeah, it is. It's
like Russian roulette. You don't know how this is.
Darlene, as horrifying as it is, again, I will default to at least you're making the effort. We found out today.
Correct.
we found
it's
out
Connecticut.
Today.
They're making the effort. Yeah,
we found out today.
That
we have schools that have opened in West Virginia that opened with support staff already having it.
God.
I mean, that's what you get when you let West Virginia's only billionaire run the government.
Exactly. And I've mentioned a few times, although I don't know how long I'm going to last contributing to my community as a volunteer, in terms of elected office. But I sit on a library board in my community. And, you know, I've been fighting really hard along with, well, it's three Democrats, three Republicans, okay? And we have one Republican is clearly, you know, conspiracy theorist, nutcase, accusing, Black Lives Matter of being socialist. And, you know, and this is serious because it's a library. So even if patrons want to study Black Lives Matter, she's been squawking about how it's socialism, you need to present an alternative viewpoint. And although she doesn't really articulate what is the alternative viewpoint. We've been very careful though, because it's a municipal department. Okay. So it's not a private library. It's a public library. So it's part of the municipality that's predominated by Republicans, in terms of the Board of Selectmen. And we decided that the third phase for reopening, it's by appointment only unless somebody stops by unannounced, provided they're wearing a mask and gloves and there's no more than six people counting staff in the small facility, they can be admitted. Well, now, and I was really pissed. I was really angry because the first election, all of a sudden we get this message on Saturday, the Labor Day weekend, the first electman is pushing to reopen the library. We had decided, and we did a lot of debate that we were going to wait for the governor to guide us on this to do phase three. We were going to wait for him. And we were going to stay in phase two. Well, now he's pushing to try to get this thing open because the schools have gone to full time. Now, about a week now, they've gone back to full time. The little grammar school is connected to the library. They're literally in the same facility. And all of a sudden, he is saying that the municipalities never needed to close. We just did it as a courtesy back in March, April. And all of a sudden, he's pushing to reopen it. I think it was today. I voted no. He wanted us to vote over the freaking holiday weekend. I was ripping. I'm like, this is the holiday weekend. Why couldn't they made this decision on Tuesday leading into the holiday weekend? Why weren't we told before Saturday? And I'm like, we're all volunteers. The school, we don't even know how things are going to pan out with the school going back to full time yet. I voted no.
I think that was a vote sanely cast, yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, another dingbat Democrat that got on recently voted yes. I don't know how anyone else voted. I waited till I said, I am waiting till the end of the, I'm doing it Tuesday. I am not going to be bullied by this Republican first electman because I really think, I think that everything that's going on has made all of us like paranoid and possibly conspiratorial minded. But I'm thinking this is coming down from Alec again, A-L-E-C.
Ever since you mentioned that, I have been doing a lot of thinking. And I even did a little bit of nosing around. And, Alec has a strong libertarian streak. And to the extent that it's run and funded largely by the Koch brothers. There's a lot of people out there, there are a lot of writing out there that says that the Koch brothers are not down with Trump right now, which kind of makes it seem like maybe we have to look somewhere else. And maybe that somewhere else is just the plain old-fashioned garden variety GOP. Trump, McConnell, and Ronna McDaniel on down. It could be that simple. That this level.
It might be. I mean, I find it hard to believe that the Koch brothers, they've been awfully, Alec has been awfully quiet. They've been awfully quiet. I haven't heard much about them, haven't seen much about them, and, you know, I don't know. You could be right. My gut was saying Alec is behind this, and the word is coming down from somewhere, because now all of a sudden the Republican first selectman is pushing to open this library. And I'm like, we're having a board meeting. My little board is having a board meeting. The 16th. And I'm like, I think we should wait at least until the 16th so we can debate this out. We can really hash this out and see how the kids are doing, how the school is doing. Look at what happened with the New Milford schools tonight. So it's like, and I feel bad, you know, because I'm right next to the school. There's a parking lot separating me from the school. The kids are adorable. They're so cute. And I feel so bad for them because they're all going in there with masks and they're adjusting them and they're trying to put the little masks on. And everybody's been really good. And the patrons into the library, my understanding, has been really good. And families have had to be turned away. And it's like, and the staff feels bad, but it's like, I know it's crushing, but we're talking about lives here. And I feel so bad for these kids, these preschoolers, these kids up to grade 5, used to be grade 6, but they moved the 6th grade over to a more regionalization, which they should have done. They should be regionalizing everything a great deal more. But these kids, they don't know. I don't think they're probably too young to really understand how dire this is. And they're relying on adults, on us, on parents, to protect them. And it's like, as a group, overall, adults are worse. You know, we're fucked up. I mean, I'm not saying you and me specifically, but if you look at adults are not handling this well at all. Americans don't do well with this kind of stuff at all, with COVID-19 and viruses and things like that. And we're expected to guide these little ones, these little people. You know, they're innocent. They don't understand.
I think it's an awful thing to do to children, Darlene.
It's awful to do that. And you know, connecting it back to this piece of shit in the White House who clearly knew this was dire. And these, they're innocent. The innocence and innocence as in C-E-N-T-S, you know, they're it's like, how do you explain this to them? They trust us. They have to trust us. They have no choice. They are so dependent and reliant.
Yeah,
on
we're
us.
we're talking about an age group that you have to walk very carefully through what happens when the goldfish starts floating. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. I know what I mean. I know what you mean. I know what I mean.
And we're gonna reach them. We're gonna reach them with a pandemic. We're gonna and to the extent that,
and we're panicked.
Right. And I mean, I have no doubt. I would have no lack of confidence in your ability to try to explain how dangerous things are to a 6-year-old.
Right.
I would even feel relatively comfortable trying to do it. But I live in a state where you can't reliably explain this to probably at least half of the population of the state. The adult population of the state, Darlene. I mean, I realize that me reporting on one stupid woman's comment on Jim Justice's press conference does not constitute hard empirical data. But the statistics nerds would tell me that there is a chance that if you got that one person that I identified, that there have to be others just like her. And there is anecdotal evidence to suggest this. It's like the kid at the Rippy Mart that I was talking about last night with Todd. And he said, you know, a guy came through here with journalistic credentials, and he said it'll be all over by Election Day. And I looked at him like a cow. I looked at him like a cow looking at a new gate, Darlene. I said, you have got to be kidding me. Please tell me you don't believe that. That person was a liar.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, my God.
I would throw this out here because I'm going to throw this out into the conversation because I'm not sure I necessarily think that the adults here in Connecticut are necessarily any wiser than the adults in West Virginia.
Hold on, Darlene. I think one factor is probably telling in this. I would dare say that you have a significantly higher college-educated population in Connecticut than we do here. A significantly higher percentage of your population has a college education. You know, I don't know where in the low double digits West Virginia is, but we're in the low double digits, if not single digits.
We do. We're known as probably one of the most educated states in the country. That said, there was a spike following the Labor Day weekend of hospitalizations, deaths, and non-hospitalized cases. And here in Connecticut, okay, so I live on a kind of a busy road, and we have the famous Lime Rock racetrack several miles up from where I live. And it's a heavily traveled road. A lot of motorcyclists are out. It is the exception, not the rule, the exception that I see a motorcyclist wearing a mask. Okay. And again, I'm not able to see license plates all that much. There's some motorcycles and stuff. We see a lot of New York. We see a lot of out of state. There are a lot of out-of-staters coming in. But I think because we do have a state government that's taking this seriously, and they're pushing the issue, I think that has been very, very critical. But I'm telling you, there people can be highly educated and very smart and still buy in the libertarian stupidity and the conspiracy theories. I know.
Oh, without a doubt.
I have friends who are like that.
Yeah.
So, the education, like I said in the beginning, it's all nuanced. It's like the education is a factor and all of that. I think the fact that the state is taking this seriously and fining people like to the nines for violating, if they leave the state, and go to one of the one of the states that is on the list. I think it was 14 last time I checked. 14 different states where things are spiking, and if they come back in and they don't quarantine, they're going to be fined another $1,000. They're taking it very seriously, but there seems to be a growing Republican movement, GOP movement within the state to try to stifle or stymie what Governor Lamont has done so effectively. All of a sudden now, well, we're not where we're at now, 5 months ago, blah, blah, blah. They want to be able to step in and have more control, whereas Governor Lamont has been doing these executive orders, over 70 different executive orders. They've been working, though. But even though we've been more measured, we've been taking these steps, we're still running into problems with the school system. You know, and again, New Milford is the next town over from Danbury, which I had mentioned to you, I think, a couple weeks ago when I called in, that they had a spike in Danbury. Now, Danbury is part of Fairfield County. Right. So it's in that little, that, and again, it's like a spread, because I think Danbury is part of Fairfield County. Fairfield County, back in March and April, that was the worst in terms of cases in the county, which is right next to New York. So it seemed like it had flared, and it spills a little bit over into New Milford, which I think is part of Litchfield County. We're doing pretty well here in Litchfield County, all things considered, compared to Fairfield. So, looking at the trends, it's almost like you can see it on the map, how this stuff spreads, you know, and how it spills over. And you can see it not only on a macrocosmic level, but a microcosmic level and a personal level. I'm now worried about my niece, because she's compromised. She has lungs that aren't, you know, that aren't, she's had to be on a nebulizer for many years. I mean, she's really struggled. And this kid is she's adorable. She is on I don't do Snapchat and Instagram, but apparently she's constantly forwarding stuff on Black Lives Matter and LGBTQ rights. She's brilliant, and she's just the kid. And I hope for me has some influence on her, but she's very progressive in her thinking, and she's clocked in at 13 years old. So I'm worried about her now. These things, like I said, it's like Russian roulette. You just don't know. So the fact that you were bringing that up about the schools going back to full time, the New Milford schools weren't back more than 2 weeks. They weren't back into it more than 2 weeks. And already they've had to shut down. And they've been staggering. They've been staggering, or hybrid. It's been a hybrid setup, my understanding is. They've done a hybrid. So they have the kids in the schools 6 feet apart, you know, in the classrooms, I think, is Monday and Wednesday, and then Tuesday and Thursday is remote learning. And they still ran, there was a problem. Now they reacted quickly. They're shutting the school systems down for 2 days.
Darlene, can you explain to me
who knows how long?
Why this hybrid? Okay, we're only going to go to school and subject our children to a deadly virus 2 days a week, but the rest of the week we're going to do virtual schooling. How or where is that a sensible decision?
Well, clearly it isn't, because there's already been a problem.
Kind of my point.
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure. That's a really good question. I think that's along the lines of my nephew saying, well, why did this kid go to school in the first place? His whole family was infected. You know, it's like, duh. That's a good question. I don't know how effective it is versus how it might be more of a psychological kind of soothing. It might be more. You know what I mean? In other words, it's really not effective, but it's more or less to give people a sense.
What I'm asking is, are they?
It could be effective.
Are they giving in to the noisy? Yeah. Are they giving in to the noisy and stupid? You know, we got to get our cheering back in school.
I don't know. I mean, Lamont has been pretty good about. It's a tough one. I don't know if there's like if it's that's a good question, because I'm not sure if it depends on the individual school systems. Like Connecticut should have regionalized its school systems long ago, but a lot of the towns and cities are kind of like they have a fiefdom kind of mindset. So I'm not sure if if Lamont, I'd have to do more of a deep dive into it. If he turned around and said, look, here are the basics that you need to comply with, you know, mask, PPE, hands, you know, that kind of thing. And then it's up to the individual school administrations to figure out the particulars and the details of what they want to do. And that could be the problem. And he may not have specific control over it. Because, for example, like what happened with Danbury, even though, you know, I had family members that were blaming Lamont, it was really the town officials that closed down the lake because of the partying that was going on and the complaints. And, you know, and these, like, super spreader kind of events. So the local, there may be the local control. It may be because it's up to the local control, the municipalities themselves that they design. I mean, we pretty much, for the library, we pretty much designed it ourselves for the board as a board member. And we based it on what the state was telling us were the CDC and local and state guidelines. You know, some of which aren't mandatory, some of which are. And we had flexibility. We had quite a bit of flexibility. So for the most part, we took a very rigid approach, even though we had the nutcase Republican there who basically said, well, we're not legally required to do this. We should just basically have the doors fly open. But we have the library, of course, has a pretty big elderly patronage, a lot of elderly patrons that go in because this is a town that's dying and aging out, and, you know, that kind of thing. So we took a very hardcore stance on it, but it looked like there was flexibility. We didn't necessarily have to do that. And maybe that's the problem. And one of the concerns I have is that this little library facility is tiny. The windows are fixed. And there have been problems with the windows in terms of they need to be replaced. But it's not like you can have these little kids and their families come into the facility and open up all the windows to let in the air, because clearly there's
that's a disaster waiting to happen. I mean, it's exactly. Plain and simple. It's a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah.
And see, when you say they operate like petty fiefdoms, I know exactly what you're talking about, because as I mentioned repeatedly, the geniuses in the Fayette County Board of Education said, you know what? We love our little 2020 graduates, so we're going to give them a real live graduation ceremony. And they did, in three separate locations in this county, one of them about 8 miles away from me. And I think I posted some of the photos online. No social distancing. You played Where's Waldo to find somebody wearing a mask. And they were butthole to belly button. And now, we're jumping. I mean, Jim Justice was freaking out today, but your observation about petty fiefdoms is very much true. But even so, I have to wonder: are public health officials at the state level so tied down, so muzzled, that they can't pick up the phone and call the superintendent of education in, say, Fayette County, West Virginia, and say, are you fucking nuts? The hell do you think you're doing? You're going to kill people doing this. Because that obviously did not happen. And so today, Jim Justice is freaking out. I mean, he really was. He was bugging a little bit. He was talking about... Our reinfection number is at 7.6. And we can't have that. If it keeps going like this, we're going to have to do things y'all don't want. When in point of fact,
our, yeah.
shutting the state down needs to happen now. Oh, and he got all indignant. You'll love this, Darlene. He got all indignant.
I mean, somebody was telling me the other day that New York and Connecticut is saying they don't want nobody from West Virginia coming to their states.
That's right.
That's just insulting.
As if even before the pandemic, anybody in Connecticut or New York wanted a bunch of hillbillies coming up. Bumpuses! Oh, he was pissed.
I wouldn't go that far, but... I want to visit West Virginia. I was hoping I'd have my van by then, but then COVID hit, and I don't have my van yet. But, I certainly would love to come to West Virginia, you know, once everything is, you know, once we're past this disaster. But it's sort of a catch-22 because our average, we're under the 1% average here in my state. So on the one hand, that's good. But on the other hand, it gives fuel to Republicans to say, well, you know, we're okay. We can reopen everything when everything is so tenuous. Like I said, things spike after the holiday weekend. So it's like we're just barely keeping this. I think we're barely keeping this thing in check. So we are doing it right. But I feel horrible in the sense that I feel like the kids here and my concern are, of course, our kids. But as a board member for this library, in a sense, I'm basically having to say, we need to see how the school is doing, i.e., the school, the kids are guinea pigs for us. They're guinea pigs. Because it's like, I had to say, we need to see how the school is doing before we wind up putting them in this contained space. And we had, because the Republican, nutcase on our board was pushing the issue. Eventually, small d democracy, we got around to the decision that we wanted to ask our fire marshal, what is the maximum occupancy of the library pre-COVID? And find out what are we working with? What are the base numbers that are we working with? So as I am the secretary, So I had to write out this very detailed letter. Before I knew it, I was like, oh, this is a bit more complicated than I thought. And I started adding things like, you know, what is the maximum occupancy for the little children's reading room pre-COVID? You know, what are we dealing with here in terms of these base numbers? I don't know if we ever heard from the fire marshal. I said right away, with the board president's approval, you know, I crafted the letter. She approved it. We sent it off. So we don't even have those base numbers. So here I am, like, I feel I'm forced to have to say, we need to see how the school itself is doing. How are these kids doing before we let them into a contained space? Which, you know, I think what I'm going to do at the meeting is I'm going to try to push for or insist that the particular, you know, they have a separate entity that is a nonprofit. They hold the funds. And we'll tap into these various funds to say buy. We spent quite a bit of money for digital books because the libraries are trying to remake themselves in the digital age. So we've tapped into the various funds and trusts that are held by this separate entity so that the library director could go ahead and make, you know, quite a few purchases because families were asking for reading material that, you know, digital audiobooks and things like that, ebooks, when the pandemic first hit. I'm wondering if we should try to tap into this fund. I'm going to suggest it. Say, can we get like a HEPA filter, like a portable HEPA filter air purifier system with UV light treatment and get it into that building. If we're going to put little kids and families in there, if that's going to, then, and you can't, and the windows are fixed, you can't freaking open them and let in the air. And of course, you know, the weather's going to start to deteriorate and get colder. Can we get something in there like that? Now, it's not been proven yet because they're still researching it, but most scientists will say that the HEPA filters, UV light treatment type air purifiers can, you know, they have been effective, I guess, against SARS, which is in the same family of viruses like COVID-19. So it could be one additional line of defense, along with doing the PPE, you know, the sanitizing, the social distance, all that other stuff. That's the only thing that I can think to try to protect everyone that's going in there. So that's, you know, this stuff.
I think it's laudable to consider something like that, but just the way you've described the facility, for whomever the librarians are and the custodial staff, it's going to be a constant war of wiping down everything every time somebody touches it. And in a building full of books and computer keyboards and the like, it's near impossible.
Well, and little kids. Yeah, right. We're talking preschool kids. We're talking elementary school kids. The kids are adorable. You know, I've watched them for years. The cutest little things. But they're fucking with the mess. Your heart breaks when you see little girls, little preschool girls in little dresses, little boys. It's so cute. And they're dancing around and they're excited. And they have these things on their faces. It's like, it's so different and unusual. What the library is doing is that, you know, everybody has to wear masks, they have to wear gloves, and they wipe down after every time somebody wants to use a computer. Computers are wiped down. There's limitations on, you know, how many people can be in a room. I think it's like six individuals counting staff. And sometimes there can be 2 to 3 staff members there, so it's not very many people that can go in from the public, you know. And then you have the appointments that had to be made, and that was a big sticking point for the GOP. The Republican got cases all into conspiracies and things, Black Lives Matter, socialism, blah blah blah. But kids were not allowed in. And this is the new thing. It's allowing families in now with the kids. So now it's kicked into a whole other level where there's less control. And any books that have been touched by human hands that have been taken out, they're aired out for four days. They're not touched. They're shelved for 4 days. Wiped down, if it doesn't damage the books, and then they're aired out for 4 days. So I think we're doing everything we can. We're being very reasonable about it. But this was during a time when the school was not in session. They had shut down school. And I don't want to hear the bullshit from the first selectman. Well, we closed the municipality. We weren't required to, but we did it as a courtesy. Are you fucking kidding me? All of a sudden it was done as a courtesy? You know, looking back in March.
Wow, that's amazing when not killing somebody's a courtesy. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm like, what? That's beside the point. And it's like, we're not his freaking rubber stamp. Sorry. So I don't know what the final vote tally was, but I know at least I'm on the record of saying no. No. And maybe I'll change my tune. Maybe I'll change my tune come September 16th when we have our meeting and we're able to talk through Zoom or whatever we do. Maybe I'll change my mind, you know, and they'll reassure me enough. The library director seems comfortable. But again, she's under pressure because, you know, she's got to walk a very fine line politically. She tries to stay as apolitical as possible with the board. And her ultimate boss is the first electman. And he, all of a sudden, he wants to reopen. And it's like, what?
Right, and that would, no aspersions on the library director, but that would make me nervous about any stated position that she has, because she's under pressure to do her boss's bidding.
Exactly. And I've tried to protect her. I feel really bad for her because she's tried to really navigate in between the crazies on, some of the crazies on the board and everything. So it's the best that I can do is just go on the record and say no and wait and see how things pan out, because this is a whole new world. We're in a whole new situation here. And we just, again, what happened with the Milford schools. I'm not surprised, but I can't explain it. I guess it's like, well, it kind of makes sense, but I'm still a little shocked that it happened so quickly, but I shouldn't be. But it's just like, wow, this is so, we just don't know what we're dealing with. So, and the ramifications of it. So anyway, I just wanted to call in and tell you that, because you were talking about the kids going back to school. So I thought it was very relevant.
Oh, I think it absolutely is.
And I am,
you've got a cogent argument, yeah. Darlene. You get to look at them when they start saying, well, children don't get it very much. You get to say, listen, what you are saying is that children don't get it much, but you're not saying they don't get it all. And you're not saying children don't ever die from it. So what you are saying is that you are comfortable with some degree of dead children.
Exactly.
Some
exactly.
potential degree
exactly.
of dead children. And are you prepared to say that to this community? That one of your children, we don't know which one, but one of your children, we're comfortable with dying.
Well, this is the same. This is the same for selecting. And I've lamented this with a friend of mine and a neighbor down the road from me, who's also extremely progressive and quite brilliant and is tuned into national politics like I am. And she's picking up on the same stuff that the community is picking up on. And this is a first election. I think it's the only one in the state, but we have a certain traffic control system here. It's unusual. There's multiple accidents every year with this traffic control system. But nobody wants to go to red lights and green lights, and I wouldn't want it either, because I've got traffic backed up to my house, which is like a quarter of a mile away from this circle, this traffic circle. And his excuse for not upgrading it, and the state is desperate to do it, but it has to come from him, is because no one's been killed yet. There's been multiple accidents because people don't know how to freaking use, they don't know how to use it, but no one's been killed yet. So this son of a bitch is willing to gamble.
With other people's lives.
Exactly. He is your typical Republican. They keep re-electing him and re-electing him and re-electing him.
Run against him, Darlene.
And I
know, that was unfair. I apologize.
I might be a second in command. I don't know. But the woman that I mentioned who's down the street is thinking about doing it. And I'm hoping she will, because both of us are so frustrated with how everything is going. But at least, I mean, I've been like, no. I've been lately going against, usually these boards are fairly, in sync, these boards, commissions and committees, municipal departments, they're fairly in sync. and usually they're unanimous votes, but lately I've been no way. I've just been kicking back and pushing back because it's like I'm following my gut on this stuff, and listening to your program has helped me trust my gut even more, and I think that's really important. So there you go. So that's just a quick diversion, I have been milking the holiday weekend. It's been really bad because here, today was the last day, and really we've had summer-like weather. And I know you'll appreciate this. We've had summer-like weather Tuesday and today. Tomorrow, I guess we're going to, I could be waking up to thunderstorms, but a cold front is coming in tomorrow. And it's going to be very autumn-like weather, for the next 3 or 4 days. For the first time in quite a long time, because I always like to compare temperatures across, I have a friend who is, he probably left Dubai, and he and his wife are going to Egypt now for what they do. They're world travelers. And so I always have my iPhone weather app. Wherever he is, I always have the iPhone weather app for the weather. So Dubai is 90, 90, 90, 90, like sunshine, Monday through Sunday. But he's going to Egypt. It's kind of similar, but a little cooler. And then there's New York. I always like to compare to New York, and then I always like to compare to D.C. because I hope one day to be able to visit D.C. I've driven past it, but I've never actually been able to visit D.C. For the first time in that I can remember, Connecticut was warmer than D.C. according to this app, so I felt fairly triumphant.
Well, this last weekend has felt like the swan song of summer here too. But in reality, it's not because it's so weird. The entire economy here, Darlene, turns on the rivers and tourism. Yeah. So you've heard me talk about the Hawk's Nest tunnel disaster, where hundreds of African American men died digging through silica rock. That's how we learned about silicosis. Gauley Bridge, West Virginia, was known as the town of the living dead. Well, that was all part of building a dam across the new river. And so there's a lake on this side. And below the dam, the river diminishes to a trickle. Well, there's been a movement for years to wet the dries. That is, to have an annual release of water from the Hawk's Nest Dam to create, to let the rapids be restored on the lower end, the 6 mile lower end stretch of the new. And I've been supportive of that. I think that's a great idea. Well, it turns out that this year, for the first time in 60 years, is going to be the year that we wet the dries, which means that there are going to be a shit ton of tourists with their kayaks and their rubber rafts and whatnot, crawling all over us to be the first ones to raft the re-wetted dries for the first time in 60 years.
Super spreader event.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw a vehicle, and Ferg's got to where he does the line for me. We got passed out on US 19 today by a vehicle from Texas, and before I could even get it out of my mouth, Ferg said, "Gom, Texas!"
No offense, John Bernabeau.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have to assume then. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No. I was just going to say where the season, because Gauley season is coming in too, the Gauley River, those rapids are created by a release from Summersville Dam. And it's one of the most thrilling whitewater rides in the entire continental United States. And so we'll be up to our eyeballs in those folks, and then we'll double down with the lower new, the lower new, And so whatever we're at now, we're going to get manifestly worse. And just to add a little bit of fun to it all, now some pettifogging lawyer in Charleston has filed a suit against the governor, which generally I would be all in favor of, but maybe his heart's in the right place. A lawyer by the name of Alex McLaughlin, parent to two school-aged children, has filed a petition against Governor Justice saying that he is violating the equal protection rights of children in and the free schooling rights in the state constitution of children in the state by using the color-coded map that says which schools can open and which schools cannot based on how much virus there is in the county. So it's very easy to look at this and say, oh, this asshole lawyer wants to make sure more kids get sick.
Yeah, exactly.
And that they carry the virus home to more mamas and more daddies and more brothers and more sisters, more aunts, more uncles, more cousins, more meemaws and peepaws, so they can goddamn die horizontally crucified, flat on their bellies with a garden hose down their throat, honking through a respirator. But I may be wrong, because what he's saying is that it is unfair to the children of this state to make them bear the brunt of a shutdown when at the same time, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice is saying, now y'all go on out there to church and have a couple of pops in the bar as quick as you get out at noon. We know you do, especially the Baptists. And make sure you go and get all your weightlifting done down to the gym where you can sweat and spew all over each other. And what he says is that it is impossible to justify the discriminatory focus on children and the closing of schools and school sports, while adults are free to assemble in their customary venues for socializing, recreation, exercise, and work, such as bars, gyms, wedding parties, stores, and office buildings. But the dumb bastard does not say the most important word in a state like West Virginia. And that word, Darlene, is churches. Because lawyer Alex McLaughlin is afraid to say churches, when more virus is probably spread in churches around West Virginia than any other single venue.
Yeah, because they're all up close in there. Yeah.
You know, they're singing, you know, a mighty fortress is our God at each other and just at the top of their lungs and off key and it, right.
And the argument he's using is so specious. It just seems like it's, like you said, pettifogging. It's, again, I guess it's the Trump era. The Trump world. Letting the dams out, with the white water rafting. We have something that probably doesn't even compare. It's similar, with the Housatonic, dam. Well, the dam up in, I think it's in Massachusetts, is released. Well, maybe it's in Falls Village. I can't remember. Anyway, where we have the water rushing through the Housatonic River, but our whitewater rafting is like pathetic. It's probably like a level one. So I assume that the ones you're talking about, West Virginia, are probably.
Oh, these are class. Yeah. Well, like the Gaul is like class five. I mean, it's pure.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, pure screaming hell.
Wow. So you're going to like, yeah, be careful. Yeah, that's definitely, you don't want to get smashed up against the rocks. So that's some pretty serious stuff. But so I would assume, based on what you're saying, that West Virginia is not suffering from a drought like Connecticut is, because we're in a drought up here. So I assume that if the water's flowing like you're saying and they want to release the dams, that, you're doing pretty good in terms of rain.
Yeah, it is. Well, it got real wet for a couple of weeks, and it did it. And things are pretty green here. We're not particularly dry.
We are. We're about 9 inches short. So we are in a drought here. So we also apparently had smoke from overhead today, again, from California. The winds have blown it over here.
Wow.
So, and there was a point in time, it was a couple of weeks ago, I had mentioned it, I think I mentioned it, with the, after the front porch, the, back porch or whatever it is after, after you sign off, on Friday in the front porch, we had another episode of that, and I was telling Tracy and Billable and Chris about it. And I could smell it. I could smell the smoke in the air. I caught a whiff of it. It was like, oh, I can smell smoke, and I could see it, and it was just different in the sky. So we're kind of seeing that's coming over our way as well. So I'm trying to stretch out the holiday weekend. So I've been sitting out in my north deck. I've been working minimally. I'm just like, you know, going back and forth, trying to check my emails and stuff, but I've just been trying to stretch this out because I just don't want it to end. I don't want summer to end. But I'm going to have to eventually accept that it's going to end.
I know.
So
it's hard to do.
The 20th or 21st, but it's hard. It's hard. And it seems like the sun setting, losing light happens quickly. It's not, I think it was like one day was 7:14 p.m. we had sunset. And then the next day it was like 7:10 p.m.
Yeah.
I thought it went like minute by minute, but it doesn't. It was like we lost like 4 minutes.
No, it hurries.
It hurries
right along, and, you know, this is the 9th of September. We got about 11 days of summer left, and
yeah.
I know. Well, you got a note from Billable Rick.
Hey, Billable.
Hybrid schooling, the worst of both worlds. I'm listening to your call with Darlene. Hi, Darlene. It occurred to me that hybrid schooling is an idiotic idea and is the worst of both worlds. How does it make any sense to expose your child to the general school age population 2 to 3 days a week, then distance learn the rest of the time? By going to school part-time, children will be sufficiently exposed to COVID-19 to bring the disease back home to their siblings, parents, and grandparents, resulting in no net benefit in distance learning the other 2 to 3 days per week. The only part-time school that makes any sense is a pod model, where children have in-person learning in small groups in a non-school setting, with the same 4 to 5 children being present at the same time with regular testing. And of course, that's the curse here.
We still
are forever and a day getting test results back, and we got a bunch of idiots in this state who say, why would I want to get tested? I feel fine.
And clearly, you know, the school system is not working. It certainly didn't work in the Milford school system, based on what I just learned this evening.
No.
You know, it's not working. And they're doing, you know, the kids are wearing the masks, and the kids are struggling. My nephew was exhausted. He's like, it was really tough to wear that mask all day when he was there physically in the school, in the high school. And, you know, he said it was really starting to bother his face, and, you know, this is tough for these kids.
Yeah. You know, and by the way, you've got a note from Tom in Not So Sunny. The sun came out in smoky San Rafael, 4:10 p.m. Tuesday. I could see the sun, Tom writes. Sorry about the smoke, Darlene. We've had to have lights on inside all day today. Yuck. And I've got Sparky said the picture I saw earlier was a function of his flash. Well, this is a picture. I can see Tom's rooftop, and there's the sun, and it's just a pale pink dot trying to glow through the smoke and the haze, and it looks like a dying star.
Yeah,
Jesus. And, yeah, I mean, there are entire communities, there are entire communities in Washington and Oregon that are nearly wiped out at this point. 2.5 million acres burnt.
That's horrible.
20 times what it burned this time last year. Fire in suburban communities near Tacoma. Hundreds and perhaps more than 1,000 homes already destroyed in Oregon. And I'm not sure what the over-under is on when Nitwit Nero blames this on Black Lives Matter and Antifa.
And I just want to say to Tom, I certainly wasn't complaining.
Oh, no. He knows.
I'm amazed, is basically what I'm saying. I'm amazed. And what we're experiencing, you know, whatever little after.
Well, and if this continues, Darlene, it could be reminiscent of like a volcano. We know that the eruption. The eruption of Krakatoa plunged the entire portions of the entire portions of the world into a premature winter.
And I think about the big super volcano.
There's always that. That's always in the back of my mind. Because that's when that goes, it's cancel Christmas time. And you might be interested in this. As compared to the United States, Brother Deacon Asa sharing something with me. To put everything in perspective, in British Columbia, they have a 0.55% reinfection rate. And somehow they have not descended into chaos. And they've managed to manage their mask hole COVIDiots.
0.55. Wow. And you know, and then I'm thinking about with what's happening with climate change, what's going on. You know, because obviously Australia and California and the West Coast, Oregon and Washington are ground zero. They're the front line for this. I was going to go with this. I had a good thought. I just lost it. Massachusetts. What happened recently with the primary and Joe Kennedy losing?
Yeah, a first.
To an older Democrat in the primary. The heck is his name? Is it Mark? This is an M.
Oh, Markey, yeah.
Markey, that's it. I was going to say Markle, but that's not. It's Markey. And I really think it's because he was far more progressive. He's far more progressive than Joe Kennedy, this young Joe Kennedy.
I don't know what possessed him to run for that in the first place. If it's family hubris, then maybe he got a badly deserved wake up call.
Yeah, but it seems like he's unfortunately might be certainly. What put Markey over the top, you know, with young people, and they felt they liked the fact that Markey embraces the Green New Deal.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, so Kennedy, what's going on with you? So he might be more center left as opposed to more left, and maybe that's still in keeping with the Kennedy family, but times are different now. You know, that worked 50-60 years ago, but not now, because people are recognizing how dire, you know, everything is. And you know, we were hit, Connecticut was hit with more tornadoes this summer. I had a warning for my area, and with my limitations, I can't get down into my basement. So it actually hit two towns over from me. I think there was like two or three we had this summer. So it's getting worse. Whereas, you know, tornadoes were not the norm. You know, back in the 80s, we had a series. It was really bad in the next town over from me. But it's very rare. But now it's becoming more, you know, there seems to be a pattern that's evolving with tornadic activity hitting our state more frequently. Again, they're small. They're like, you know, I didn't know there was such a thing as an F0, but I guess there is. They cause enough damage. And F1s and F2s. So with the drought and that, it's pretty clear that something that our planet and our environment is just, it's in chaos, just like we're in chaos, you know, politically and, socially and culturally. There's something that, you know, we're on the precipice of something, and I don't think we're going to know on, was it November 2nd or November 3rd? I think it's the
3rd.
The 3rd, is it?
Yeah, the 3rd.
I don't think we're going to know. I don't think we're going to know who won, unfortunately. Maybe I'm just being paranoid, but I don't know if we're going to know. With all the mailing, I plan on mailing in my vote. So I'm worried about, that night, I don't know if you, I guess you're going to plan. I hope the horn is on.
Oh, we'll be here.
I'm going to be fucking my phone and I'm going to be telling the whole way through it because I'm going to be like just a mess. I'm going to be a mess that night.
I suspect we may all be.
And I assume you agree. I don't know. Maybe you think we're going to know. I don't know if we're going to know. What do you think?
No, he'll. I'm fully prepared for.
You're going to still be counting.
I am fully prepared for him to declare victory on election night based on the people who go to the polls, and then the shit will hit the fan as we begin counting. As we begin getting counts of you know, absentee ballots.
Yep, and then the Civil War starts.
Oh, yep. Jesus, I know. I hope not, but I know. Yeah.
I hope not, but I think he's going to go that in like that it was stolen from him.
So, but I got one more election. I got one more election story. Irish Dave sent this one along. I guess yesterday there was an election in New Hampshire, being a Tuesday.
Okay.
And so a woman showed up at her polling place, and she was wearing a T-shirt that said McCain Hero, Trump Zero.
Hmm, interesting.
Well, it's illegal to wear campaigning T-shirts to polling places, just like it's illegal to campaign at a polling place. So a guy named Paul Scafidi is the town moderator in Exeter, New Hampshire. And he approached the woman and said, "I'm sorry, you can't vote while you're wearing that T-shirt because it violates campaigning in a polling place laws." And the woman said, "Do you want me to take it off?" And she did. And topless and braless, proceeded to walk over to the voting booth, cast her ballot, and leave. Because she pulled her T-shirt as she yanked the T-shirt off. She yanked the T-shirt off and said, "Well, how's this?"
Only in America.
And of course the cops were not the cops. This is a remote cowbell. For the brave woman in Exeter, New Hampshire, the town moderator did not see fit to call the police, and Mr. Scafidi told Seacoast Online, "If she felt it was her right, more power to her."
That's great. Oh, jeez. That's hilarious.
It's just,
her, I guess.
I mean, just an indication there's going to be some more.
It's going to be,
it's going to get weird. And the other thing, I had no idea.
Worse and weirder.
Yeah. Well, you know, when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. That's what Dr. Thompson said. And I guess in central New Jersey today, they had a little earthquake.
In central New Jersey?
Yeah, in Jersey. East Freehold in Monmouth County experienced a 3.1 magnitude earthquake at 5 kilometers depth at 7:30 this morning.
Whoa. Didn't feel it out this way. I mean, it's kind of small, but it doesn't sound like it was very deep. Wow.
No, they're saying it was felt from New York City. It was felt from New York City to Philly.
Okay, so it bypassed thoughts. It didn't move further north or anything.
Yeah,
it might have been.
I don't know. It might have been different stratification or something. But
yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
It's just
Connecticut sits on two faults. We have two faults. We have a fault that runs scary. It literally slices the state in half. It runs under the Connecticut River, which cuts through the middle of the state. And then we have another major fault line that runs up along the my side. It's not in the state, but it's in New York. It's on the New York side, almost runs like parallel with our border with New York on the northwestern side. So we've got a couple big fault lines, but we rarely have any issues. I don't want to jinx. Or wood.
That's okay. I got some solid wood here.
The one time that I experienced it, I would say was over probably 20 years ago. It was very weird because I was in my apartment in my same town that I'm in now, and I bought a house in the same town. It was weird because I saw the corners of the room shaking. It was just very different. I'm like, that was odd. And it was just like the corners of the room were rattling. Like they were literally, like it was a visual thing and a physical thing. And I've never experienced anything like that ever. And
here on east of the Mississippi, we really don't engineer for these things the way they do in California.
No. The ground is considered more quote unquote stable.
Yeah,
here.
until you learn about the New Madrid Fault.
Yes, that one was where the Mississippi River actually reversed course.
Right, and it created Real Foot Lake in Kentucky, and there are estimations if that sucker gets froggy again, it could actually kill millions of people from, Paducah and St. Louis to Memphis and Vicksburg, et cetera.
Yeah, and I think it was in the 1800s, so it wasn't the report, you know, it wasn't.
Well, the funny thing is that portion of Tennessee and Kentucky is actually known for its geologic instability, and in the 19th century was simply referred to as the Shakes. If you said you were going to the Shakes, people knew exactly where you were headed.
Yeah, and I mean, really, the big, from what I recollect, because I did a deep dive into it years and years ago, the big, you know, I guess, the indicator outside of the river reversing course and all of that, and was the number of chimneys that collapsed on the homes. That was like one of the big, big deals was that all the chimneys they just crumbled. And so the recording of it was they think, well, you know, what is the Richter scale goes what up to 10, and I think they were thinking it was in the eights, as high as 8 or 9, but they might not have actually recorded it properly. It could have been more than that. So that was a major, major, major quake.
Yeah, it was
here
huge.
In this, you know, neck of the woods.
Yeah,
it was huge. So,
well, as Tom in sunny San Rafael says, and I love a good pun. In California, we have many faults. Many. Yeah.
Now, as I say, it's got its own season there.
Exactly, Darlene. You have yourself a wonderful evening,
right.
And keep us apprised of the goings on with your attempt to do the right thing by the little kids in the library.
I shall.
All right.
I shall, my friend. Thank you.
Take care, Darlene.
Have a good night.
Later. Our pal Darlene up in Connecticut. And so it is time to roll on out of here. Brand new Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, just a mere 50 minutes away right here, headon.live, the best place to listen to Malloy. If you'd like, join in at the Horn chat room and gather around the Malloy Truth Seeker campfire. That'll do it for now. And I'll get the upload taken care of, and a little less than 2 hours from now, get back on the road to go pick up Ferg at work. And I'm wore out. Thanks all of you for helping to bring the fundraising goal down. We'll go into tomorrow at $300. Thank you very kindly to all of you who did so much to bring the fundraising goal within reach. Thank you so very much indeed. Thanks to all of you who contribute to keep this program on the air. You are why the program remains on the air. Remember, there's a new challenge. There's a challenge out, a separate challenge, courtesy of Tony in Chico, who would badly like to see new subscribers, and will double new subscribers up to the amount of $100 if we can bring them on board. If you want to do that, let me know so I can announce it and keep track of it. It's easy to do the subscription thing. There's just a checkbox over at headon.live that says make this a recurring monthly event, whatever. And if you do that, Tony and Chico will double your first month. 10, 20, anything up to $100. So thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay home if you can. Limit your travel outside. Limit your contacts. If you have to be out and about, wear your mask. Wear gloves. Wear what you can to protect yourself. Some masks are better than others. Keep your social distance. And by all means, if you see someone coming at you talking about how the aliens will only get into heaven if they accept Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior, avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later, y'all.